From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. No state has more at stake in the current immigration debate than California. And no part of California has more at stake when it comes to immigration issues than the San Joaquin Valley. By a vote of 68 to 32, the Senate has taken the first steps in passing the most comprehensive immigration reform bill in over a quarter century. The question now becomes, what will the House of Representatives do? And if some type of immigration reform passes in the House, what will the final bill look like when it emerges from the Senate House Conference Committee? Will it include a pathway to citizenship for the 11 million undocumented who currently reside in the country? Will it be able to garner enough votes to pass both the House and the Senate and get President Obama's signature? What does the fate of immigration reform mean for California and the San Joaquin Valley? We'll ask Professor Manuel Pastor, director of the USC Center for the Study of Immigrant Integration. Gabriela Villarreal, manager of the California Immigrant Policy Center. And Glenn Godo, CEO of the Raisin Bargaining Association. We'll also hear from Congressman Jeff Denham, Republican from Modesto, Congressman Jim Costa, Democrat from Fresno, and Michael Doyle, national correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers in Washington. Immigration reform. What could it mean for California and the San Joaquin Valley?
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. The biggest change in immigration policy in over a quarter century is being currently debated in Congress. What are the implications for California and the San Joaquin Valley? Our guest is Professor Manuel Pastor, director of the USC Center for the Study of Immigrant Integration. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Glad to be here with you.
Well, how does our current immigration challenge fit in the historical context?
Well, actually, one of the things that's queuing up the immigration reform debate at the current moment is the fact that immigration into the country is actually slowing down. And our traditional receiving areas like California have actually begun to see a decline in the share of foreign-born. The really significant receiving areas like Los Angeles and San Francisco have seen a decline in the share of foreign-born for about the last 2 or 3 years. Net migration from Mexico is currently zero and probably will continue to be that way, primarily because the fertility rates in Mexico have shifted dramatically over the last 30 years. And as a result, what we're finding out is that we're talking now about how do we make sure we get more immigrants in the future and how do we deal with the immigration population.
Is it different, though, today than it was, let's say, in 1900, when we had a flood of immigrants in 1900? In other words, is this this new group of immigrants that are coming in, is this an unusual number, or is it pretty similar to other numbers in terms of percentage basis as in the past?
As a percentage of U.S. residents, it's actually a little bit lower than it was at the turn of the century. We actually had a remarkably low share of the foreign-born from the 1920s forward because of restrictive immigration legislation. So actually, particularly for California, we're less than we were at the turn of the century, but we're getting back to the norm, and it seems to be stabilizing.
You know, this was supposedly addressed in 1986 with the Immigration Reform and Control Act and President Reagan. Why didn't that solve the problem?
Well, when you think about what IRCA, the act that Reagan proposed and helped to pass, proposed, it really had three elements to it, but only a couple of them happened. One was to legalize those who were already here. The second was to do more verification at the workplace and border security. And the third was to have flows of labor into the future. They did legalize who was already here. They didn't really put in place as much of a verification system as people wanted, and they really didn't deal with future flows at all. What this new legislation that the Senate has just passed does is actually hit all three of those elements. Legalize those who are here with a roadmap to citizenship, create future flows of labor so that we actually have supply meeting the demand in the economy, and create new methods of border security and workplace verification.
Can you give our audience some of the numbers, and where are we now in terms of the number of undocumented in California, what percentage they are of the population, et cetera?
Well, nationwide, we have about 11 million undocumented. In California, it's about 2.6 million undocumented residents. That's about 7-8% of the population. But it's about 9% of the workforce, and it's a much higher share of the workforce here in the Central Valley, very critical to agriculture. Perhaps the most striking statistic, though, is that 1.5 million children in the state of California have one undocumented parent. And about 80 to 85% of those kids were born in the United States. So when people think about immigration reform, particularly legalizing the currently unauthorized population, they tend to think about the impacts just on the immigrants, but you really need to be thinking about the impacts on their children, on their communities, etc. 6% of households in California are headed by an undocumented resident. About 60% of those households have a U.S. citizen in them. So we really have a lot of mixed status families and certainly a lot of mixed status communities.
Well, what about the employment rates and wage rates for undocumented or immigrants generally?
Well, in general, the employment rates for immigrants are higher than they are for the U.S. born. And they're particularly high for undocumented immigrants who basically find that they have to be attached to the labor force because they simply can't tap into welfare programs, etc. So very high rates of attachment to the labor force and also very high rates of self-employment and startups, particularly for those who are documented immigrants. In fact, one of the main benefits that we might see from legalizing the currently unauthorized population is more startups in business.
What about the path to citizenship and its impact on an immigrant's income? I think you reported something like 14% of a boost if they become citizens. Other studies have said up to 25%. Why does this have such a significant impact?
Well, it has a lot of impact for a couple of different reasons. One is if you become a lawful resident and then eventually become a citizen, there's a wide range of other kinds of jobs that open up to you. Second, turns out that people who know they're going to stay in the country, particularly if they're citizens, tend to make what we call U.S.-specific human capital investments. They tend to invest in their own education, English learning, job training in ways that really pay off in the U.S. labor market. And third, employers see this as a positive signal. I mean, you see this in the Valley. In Valley agriculture, you know, you've got a constituency of farmers who would really like to see a lawful workforce. They know these are good workers. They don't want to be losing them to enforcement. They really want to make sure that they can stay here. And they've been one of the constituencies that's been the most supportive of this current bill that's in front of Congress.
The Republicans in the House have let it be known that they don't like the method or the content of the Senate's approach to immigration reform. So what are the prospects for reform? Our guests are folks who have more than a passing interest in the outcome. Gabriela Villarreal is the policy manager of the California Immigrant Center, and Glenn Gotto is the CEO of the Raisin Bargaining Association. Welcome to the Matty Report.
Thank you.
Well, Gabriela, let me ask you, House Republicans seem to want to approach immigration reform on an issue-by-issue basis as opposed to one comprehensive bill. What are your thoughts on approaching immigration reform on a piecemeal basis rather than a comprehensive fashion?
Well, first we should recognize that recently with the Senate passage of S-744 that there is a consensus among Republicans and Democrats in the Senate for there to be a path to citizenship that includes all 11 million undocumented immigrants. It was a bittersweet victory that has some serious considerations and impact on border communities, which would definitely impact us here in California. The House Republicans need to take notice that what happened in the Senate was true leadership, and they need to consider a real solution, a common sense solution, because what we've seen, piecemeal approaches, or actually what we've done is nothing in terms of addressing through legislation meaningful, just, humane ways of addressing the immigration system.
Glenn, what do you think? A piecemeal approach or a comprehensive approach?
Well, Mark, from our perspective, agriculture has been in this fight for many, many years, and just trying to get any kind of passage of an perspective on immigration has been a challenge. So in our mind, we would just want to see some successful conclusion to this process. If it takes piecemeal to get it through the House, to get it to conference, that's one way of possibly doing it, but we would rather see the comprehensive approach.
So what happens is the Senate passes their version, the House passes their version, and then in conference, they negotiate what the final thing is going to look like. So you're thinking at least get it to conference.
We would like to at least get it to conference, exactly.
What about the situation where the House Republicans are taking a harder line on a pathway to citizenship for undocumented residents? It seems like some changes are going to have to be made to the Senate bill to get it past the House in that regard. I mean, what do you think those changes might be?
Well, I'm not in on the particulars of exactly what they're talking about changing, but obviously border security is one of the big issues, and verification is another issue. So it looks like that the House is going to be much more security-wise as far as what they're trying to put into their bill. But, you know, they have to keep in mind also that the Senate has passed this very, pretty much overwhelmingly, when you say 68 to 32 on their vote.
So
that's a very strong vote on the Senate side.
Okay, what do you think on this issue of a pathway to citizenship and, the fact that the House may want to put in some other things to make it a little more difficult, frankly? What are your thoughts on that? And what do you think they might be?
There's a need for a balanced approach, and what we've seen is the introduction of something that will only address detention and deportations through the SAFE Act. But we also know that there is a bipartisan group of House Democrats and Republicans that have been working together to negotiate a bipartisan support. So we are looking to them to offer a solution, a bill, and that will address not just the needs of making sure that we have a compassionate way of addressing immigrant communities and families, but that offers a real common sense solution that business, community groups, and others can rally around. And right now, we're really seeing a lack of leadership in the House, even with the Senate leadership and with the passage of their bill.
You know, a big focus has been on border security. It's called something called a border surge, where they're going to spend $46 billion on external security, not so much on internal security, on employment verification and tracking those who overstay their visas. So, Gabrielle, what do you think about developing a counterfeitable card, something with biometric data on it, that everyone, immigrants included, would have to carry?
Right now, taking a look at the system we have, having a biometric card is definitely not a solution. We have to think about the implications of where that information will be mined from. Based on the Social Security Administration, where a lot of this data would come from, an estimated over 90,000 authorized workers in California alone will definitely be impacted. Notice that's authorized. That's U.S. citizens like myself, like us. That's legal permanent residents, people who have been here for a long time. And if we have a faulty data system in which such a biometric ID card, that hurts all workers, and that's not good for the economy, and it's certainly not good for the immigrant communities and families here.
Would a biometric card work in ag?
Well, what we're trying to do, Mark, is actually use recent technology as possible to implement it into our blue card status for the workers that we're going to be getting into agriculture.
And the blue card is specifically for agriculture.
Exactly. And so in that sense, we're trying to use that small portion of the immigration reform to see if that would be something that could be passed along to the comprehensive side as well.
We're talking about immigration reform and its potential impact on California in the San Joaquin Valley with Gabriela Villarreal of the California Immigrant Center and Glenn Godo with the Raisin Bargaining Association. So, Gabriela, under the Senate bill, farm workers have a shorter path to citizenship. Why is that? And is that fair?
Certainly, the Senate recognizes the important contributions that farm workers make to our country. And specifically, this is going to be very important for immigrant communities here and families here in California. What is unfair is that the rest of the path to citizenship for the remaining millions of Americans is extremely long. At this point, we're looking at well over a decade before individuals will have an opportunity to become U.S. citizens.
About 13 years, I think, in the Senate bill?
That's right. And that is really the unfairness that we've seen. It's a path that's too long. Many Californian immigrants have been here and called the United States home for well over a decade, and their contributions should need to be recognized, and they deserve a shorter path to citizenship.
Glenn, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, you probably like the fact that they have a shorter period for farm workers, but why is that?
Well, from the ag perspective, Mark, the point being that we have made the argument that trying to keep workers into the field of agriculture is difficult to begin with, and so we need some sort of magnet to keep the workers in the field for a few years, and then get our guest worker programs in place so that we can go forward with those. But it's really to make sure that we have an adequate supply of labor when this program starts.
You know, there's another issue of English proficiency, and again, the measures seem to be a little easier for ag worker, for farm workers. Why the exemption on English proficiency?
agency for farm workers?
Well, the way I understand it, Mark, is that the only exemption is for the permanent residency, but if the person, individual, still wants to go after citizenship, he'll be required to go and undergo all the other things, such as English proficiency, in that process.
What do you think, Gabriella? Is that appropriate? English proficiency, how do you feel about that issue?
All immigrants know that in order to make use of the opportunity here in the country, that they need to learn how to speak English. And we've seen immigrants who are clamoring for ESL classes here in the state. And this is something that we know is important to immigrant communities to learn, to be continue contributing to our communities, and to drive here.
So you see, they have an incentive already to learn English?
Absolutely. And this is, and many of them do speak English well. What's missing is adult education classes to make sure that the immigrants who are on the path to citizenship get an opportunity to meet the very high requirements that are currently in the Senate bill.
Well, you might like Governor Brown's proposal to give more money to schools that have a large percentage of ESL students. That's probably going to help a little bit in that regard.
Well, that certainly would help for K through 12, but we need to take a look at the adult population and see the needs for adult education and make sure that those ESL classes are available for those immigrant workers and their families.
You know, what about E-Verify, Glenn? There's a longer phase-in period for agriculture, for E-Verify. Why?
Well, we've pointed out to Homeland Security already the issues that we've got with the current E-Verify program if they were to try to put that in place. And so that is why I mentioned earlier about the blue card and trying to use that new technology to put it into the blue card so that we can have a verified program that'll work out in the field, because we have very different circumstances when we're hiring people as agricultural day laborers. And so that's the challenges that we're, some of the challenges that we're going through right now.
You know, Gabriel, let me switch gears a little bit and talk about the H-1B issue. That's the highly skilled workers. There's almost a doubling of the visa cap from 65,000 to 110,000 under the Senate bill. Plus, they're targeting 5,000 more visas for these STEM areas, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. What do you say to those who worry that this is going to hurt the employment prospects and wages of American workers in those STEM fields?
This bill is not perfect, but one provision that people should know is that there will be an increase in fees for those visas, and those fees are going to be used and reinvested into America's K through 12 as well as higher ed education system, specifically for the issues of science, technology, engineering, and math. And so that is a reinvestment in the education system for the United States. It's a small step. It won't address the entire system, but certainly those fees that will come out of the new H-1B visas will go towards educating America's students.
Yeah, you know, let me ask you, we talked a little earlier about the possibility that comprehensive immigration reform might not pass, but maybe we'll have a separate bill on ag. Do you think that's going to really happen? Do you think the Senate's going to go along with a separate bill just on ag immigration?
You know, having recently been in Washington, D.C., I think the Senate side has, what they've done, overwhelmingly passing their version of immigration reform. It's going to be very difficult for the House to try to piecemeal this legislation through, although that may end up being the pathway that they do end up going. But I think that piecemeal is going to really, or any changes to, major changes to the Senate version is going to be a challenge for the Senate.
Well, if you're a betting person, what would you bet in terms of passage of comprehensive immigration reform this year?
Well, I'm still an optimist, Mark, so I'm betting the farm, let's put it that way, okay, that we're going to get it before the end of the year.
What do you think, Gabriella? Comprehensive immigration reform by the end of the year?
This, through the courage, determination, and action and energy of immigrant communities and families throughout the country, we need it now. It's a common sense solution, and we will continue to fight to make sure that there's a bill that addresses our families' and communities' needs.
Okay, well, I want to thank Gabriella Villarreal from the California Immigrant Center and Glenn Godot from the Raise and Bargaining Association. We're talking with Professor Manuel Pastor, director of the USC Center for the Study of Immigrant Integration. Let's assume some type of comprehensive immigration reform does pass. You've written that, quote, California should start planning for what comes after reform, immigrant integration. Why is that important?
Because if we really want to see the economic benefits from immigration reform, we have to accelerate the integration of immigrants, not just the undocumented immigrants who may achieve this registered provisional immigrant status, the temporary status that'll be afforded by this legislation if it passes, but also other legal immigrants in the state as well. The state hasn't done a good enough job about putting the resources into English learning, parent engagement, all of the stuff that we know will make a difference for immigrants and their children.
You know, Gabriella was talking in an earlier segment about English proficiency and the need to help adult undocumented and other immigrants learn English. What do you think ought to be done to increase English proficiency?
Well, one of the things that we know is that almost all of the adult ESL, English as a Second Language classes, are double subscribed. That is, there's twice as much demand as there is supply. And the interesting thing about that is English is the absolutely critical thing to be able to engage civically, to be able to advance economically, and significantly for parents to be able to speak to their teachers of their children about how their kids are doing. So one of the things we would really need to do is really expand English. There's a little bit of legislation that's being proposed by Senator Ricardo Lara to create an office for new Americans here in the state, modeled after stuff that's happened in Illinois and in New York and in Maryland, to help facilitate this process.
What kinds of things would they be doing?
They would help to try to coordinate efforts that are being done across different agencies. They would try to bring the business community into the debate. One of the things that's been interesting about the debate this year on comprehensive immigration reform, in 2007, everyone who helped to stop that legislation was incredibly proud. Business claimed credit, labor claimed credit, immigrant rights groups claimed credit because it was going to be bad legislation, anti-immigrant activists claimed credit because they thought it would be bad legislation. This year, nobody wants to be stuck being labeled as the person who stood in the way of immigrant legislation and business. For example, tomorrow, I'm going to be at the Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce talking about immigrant integration. Business has an important interest in this, a need in it. They can help to encourage, for example, naturalization of those who are lawfully here. They can help to encourage job training, et cetera.
Okay. We've been talking about the legislation, but what if it fails? It's done in some kind of individual piecemeal fashion. What are the implications of an issue-by-issue approach as opposed to a comprehensive approach?
Well, two things about that. We currently have 2.6 million unauthorized residents here in the state of California. If it fails, we continue to have 2.6 million unauthorized residents in the state of California with no real place for them and also no way to really secure our borders or to secure our workplaces or to have the future labor flows that we need for agriculture and high tech in the state. So this state has such an interest in comprehensive immigration reform. And the strategy that's being proposed in the House of trying to do this piecemeal is really a strategy to leave immigration reform in pieces on the floor. It's not a strategy to move something. It's a strategy to stop something. You know, if you look at the bill that the Senate passed, it's got a lot of elements that are good and a lot of elements that some of us might think are bad. It's got really an artful compromise between all sorts of different interests. That is the kind of legislation that people know that we've needed for years, and I hope that we'll be able to stick with it over the next 6 months.
So there seemed to be some agreement, frankly, on the ag portion of immigration reform on both Republican and Democratic side. You don't think that that individual piece might pass?
I think if immigrant rights activists don't get a piece of the legislation that helps the wide body of undocumented immigrants be able to find a pathway to citizenship, I think if business in the Silicon Valley doesn't get their high-tech workers, I think if those worried about border security don't get that or workplace verification, I think if other sectors of the economy that rely on low-skill labor don't get the W visa program, they're going to start trying to peel the thing apart and ag won't get what it wants. Agriculture has been trying for an ag jobs bill for years. Their best shot is in comprehensive immigration reform.
What if this is 2007 all over again, where we've got this all-or-nothing approach and it becomes nothing? Then what? Then what economically? Then what politically?
I think if it does not pass, it's going to be a short-term political disaster for everyone. It's going to be have a lot of short-term and long-term economic costs. It's going to be a long-term political problem for the Republican Party if the Republicans in the Congress, House of Representatives, are seen as having been the obstacle to something which has support from 60 to 70% of the U.S. public. People want a fix to this. They want a roadmap to citizenship. They want future flows. They want increased border security. They want what's represented in the Senate bill.
So use your crystal ball. Is it going to pass?
You know, I was more optimistic about 2 months ago. I'm a little bit less optimistic now because of watching two things. One is the House Republicans trying to scramble to figure out a way to not let it pass, and the way in which Speaker of the House, Boehner, has not been able to even pass a farm bill and essentially be able to control his own caucus. So I think unless Boehner is willing to take the politically courageous risk of saying this will get through with a majority of Democrats and a sufficient number of Republicans, we're not going to see a palatable bill get through the Congress. And the immigrant rights activists have been pushed about as hard as they can be pushed with what's been put into the Senate bill.
Okay, well, I want to thank Professor Manuel Pastor from the USC Center for the Study of Immigrant Integration, Gabriela Villarreal with the California Immigrant Policy Center, and Glenn Gota with the Raisin Bargaining Association for joining us.
Up next, what fate awaits immigration reform in the U.S. House of Representatives? We'll talk to Congressman Jim Costa, Democrat from Fresno, Congressman Jeff Denham, Republican from Modesto, and Michael Doyle, national correspondent from McClatchy Newspapers in Washington.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. The Senate has passed its version of immigration reform, and now all eyes are focused on the U.S. House of Representatives. What are the issues being debated in the House, and how will they be addressed? On a piecemeal issue-by-issue basis, or in one whole package? Or is the issue of a pathway to citizenship a deal-breaker? We have a Republican and a Democratic congressman to share their viewpoints on those issues. Congressman Jeff Denham is a Republican from Modesto, and Congressman Jim Costa is a Democrat from Fresno. Welcome to the Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Let me start with you, Congressman Costa. Let's start with the most basic question. Does the current immigration system merely need to be tweaked, or do we need wholesale reform? And if wholesale reform is needed, should it be one comprehensive bill or an issue-by-issue approach?
Well, I think we have a broken immigration system, and I think tweaking it won't fix it. I think we need comprehensive immigration reform. I supported comprehensive immigration reform when President Bush first proposed it in 2007, and I support it now. The efforts that the Senate bill have come out, I think, is comprehensive immigration reform. Certainly there's items that people can like and dislike about the Senate bill, but it is the comprehensive fix that needs to be done to make this system work again, and that's my take on it.
Congressman Denham, what's your take on it?
Well, we certainly can't tweak this. This is something I want to fix one time for my lifetime, for my kids' lifetime, and it's gone on several decades now. So I think we need a complete immigration overhaul that deals with each of the basic issues that have been debated in the House, first of all, and now. Hopefully we'll see our comprehensive package come out of the House as well that the Gang of Seven's been working on.
What about, Congressman Denham, what about this ongoing tension between a pathway to citizenship that some critics call amnesty? First, should there be a pathway to citizenship for those undocumented folks who currently live in the United States, about 11 million? And second, did the Senate strike the right balance on this issue?
You know, I am very encouraged with the progress that the Senate has made. I think they made a lot of progress last week, and now it's up to the House to show some real action. And really, we're going to get the strongest reform by getting both bills into conference where you're going to get a full package that comes out. So we're looking forward to going back to Washington, D.C. and addressing each of the different areas. But certainly, earned legal status has to be part of it. I don't think that all 11 million that are undocumented today want citizenship. My father-in-law was a perfect example of that when he went through the 86 plan.
Okay.
But we've got to do something. Right now we have de facto amnesty, and it's got to stop.
Okay, Congressman Costa, what are your thoughts on this pathway to citizenship for the 11 million undocumented, and did the Senate strike the right balance?
I think the Senate struck a good balance, and I don't know that we can improve upon it. I believe if the Senate bill were on the House floor next week, it would have, I don't know, 180, 190 Democratic votes for it. But I think that the House does need to put together a comprehensive package, whether it's in one bill or several different bills that will allow us to go to conference. But I will tell you that earned path to citizenship has to be a part of any final package, because and not amnesty, and those who are detractors who don't want us to succeed call it amnesty, but what's contained in the Senate is an earned path to legal citizenship, and whether or not we can improve upon that remains to be seen.
That's a 13-year path from the Senate bill. I wanted to also just clarify for folks, so the Senate passes their bill, and then the House passes their bill, and then they meet in conference to work out the differences. That's the way it works, correct?
That's the way it's supposed to work.
That's the way it's supposed to work. Okay. So what about, Congressman Costa, what about external security and border security, this whole issue of the border surge, where they're spending $46 billion on additional security along the U.S.-Mexican border? Was it too much, too little, or just right?
Well, a lot of people have different points of view on that. I think you need to put it in context. We've tripled our border security in the last 5 years, up to 20,000 now border control officers that are between the U.S. and the Mexico border. We have remote surveillance, those drones that everybody, I think, is aware of. We've done a lot of other efforts to improve border security. And on top of this is the Senate proposal. For some people, they think it goes overboard. In my view, protecting our border and security is a key component of this effort. And certainly the Senate proposal improves on that. Again, I don't know what other thoughts people have on the House side that could do better than that. But at the end of the day, we're counting votes, and we have to get sufficient votes on a bipartisan basis to pass a bill.
Okay, Congressman Denham, what do you think about this external security and the $46 billion border surge?
Well, certainly border security has to be our number one priority. If we fail to secure the border, any reform we pass will be ineffective and fail to bring about the change the American people deserve. So it has to be the key component in pulling everything else together. But let me tell you one area where I would change it from the Senate version. I've got real concerns with Janet Napolitano certifying that the border is secure. I have real concerns with a new commission that would be set up to secure the border or to certify the border. I'd like to see the governors of all the border states ensure that each of their own borders are secure. Put the put it closer to states' rights and closer to the people, making sure that each state is certifying that their border is secure. And all the other technology upgrades and making sure that we've got a strong fence, those are all things that are included in the bill that I think need to stay in the bill.
Well, Congressman Denham, what about internal security, making sure that employers don't hire the undocumented and making sure that people don't overstay their visas? Is enough being done there in the Senate bill? Does more need to be done?
Well, this has been something that we've debated for quite some time now. E-Verify has been around for a while, but we were never in a position where we could just pass E-Verify.
Do you want to clarify what
I believe the House needs to strengthen the internal security language that was passed by the Senate. I do believe the internal security measures can be there and can be upheld.
Do you want to define E-Verify for folks?
E-Verify would be a secure way of identifying anybody that has a job. So any employer would actually have to verify that they're here legally, that they have a visa, that they've passed a background check, and then businesses, farms would be held accountable.
Okay.
And in essence, you do that through electronically verifying a person's W-2 form with their Social Security number. And if comprehensive immigration reform were come to pass and signed into law, then we would then know people's Social Security number is actually legitimate and therefore could be matched with a W-2 form, and that would take the burden off of employers.
Congressman Costa, I want to ask you about another big issue, and that is the supply of highly skilled workers to American firms, the so-called STEM skills, science, technology, engineering, and math. There's some talk about replacing family reunification with these jobs that the economy needs and granting visas on that basis. What do you think about that? I mean, should they be in a zero-sum situation, or should these two issues be dealt with separately?
I don't believe the two are mutually exclusive. I mean, America's all about families. Families who were immigrants past, immigrants present, like most of our families, I believe. And the last, I mean, part of the whole effort with the Dream Act last year now is to reunify families, not to put families in a perpetual limbo of some kind. STEM is very important. Science, technology, engineering, and math. We are educating many of these people who come from all around the world in America's universities, some of the brightest and best. And then after they get an American university education, then we send them back. Shame on us. It's not very smart either. I mean, we ought to be using those people that are in the cutting edge of science and technology, engineering, to contribute to America's economy and not give them the benefit of an education and then send them from whatever they came, from wherever they came from. So the two should be dealt separately, and they should not be mutually exclusive in any comprehensive immigration package, in my mind.
You know, when I was graduate director at the university, and we did have some very, very talented international students that were part of the program. Congressman Dunham, what are your thoughts on that, on the STEM visas versus family reunification? Should they be dealt with together, or should they be dealt with separately?
I believe they're two separate issues, but I do agree this is about strengthening America, making sure that our country is attracting the best and brightest, and the STEM issue is making sure that we're attracting the best and brightest of the workforce around the entire globe, and working in our technology areas. I mean, here in the Silicon Valley, our biotech industry, I mean, we want to make sure that not only are we staying vibrant, but that we're able to grow here and grow jobs here, grow the economy here, rather than exporting that talent to other countries and seeing our homegrown companies grow abroad.
Is there any concern, Congressman Dunham, that adding more foreign workers with these STEM skills might adversely affect American workers' employment opportunities and prospects, maybe in pay, that those Americans that have those STEM skills as well? Is there going to be some adverse competition?
The goal of any legislation we pass concerning STEM skills should be, I mean, this should be something that is provided to American employers with the workers that they need and help our country attract the best and brightest, as well as those that are getting educated here at home. If somebody comes here on a foreign visa, gets an education through our education system, through our universities, we want to make sure they've got an opportunity here, as well as making sure that those jobs are filled by Americans as well.
Well, I want to ask a question here of Congressman Costa about the ag worker issues and immigration. Is the Senate's proposal that they worked out between the growers and the United Farm Workers good for the Valley?
I believe it is, and it was a compromise that was hammered out over 6 months. The major agricultural associations here in California negotiated with UFW, and I think they reached a compromise that, in my mind, works. In addition to certifying through a blue card those agricultural workers who are here today, it also creates the possibility for a visa cap to take into account future needs for our Valley's agriculture.
It's something like 112,000 ag workers per year for a three-year period, about 336,000. Congressman Dunham, what are your thoughts on the ag provisions of immigration reform?
You know, we have the largest ag industry in the nation. This is our number one economy here in California. And quite simply, the current H-2A program just doesn't work for us. I'm a local grower here myself, and we need to make sure that we've got foreign workers that are able to come in and work on a temporary basis as a system that has worked in previous decades, as well as works in other countries. Canada has a great guest worker program that should be a model for the things that we're putting together here in the House bill.
Okay, well, last question for both of you, and I'll start with you, Congressman Dunham. Bottom line, what are the prospects for comprehensive immigration reform this year?
I think very high. You know, I'm really encouraged not only by the progress that's made in the Senate, but to see a coalition come together here in our state with the California Farm Bureau, Western Growers, the UFW. I mean, it's a long list of very diverse interests that all want to fix this. So I think as you look across the nation, other industries involved, even outside of agriculture, including the Chamber of Commerce on a nationwide basis, it really has all the makings of a bill that should get done here in the next couple of months.
Okay.
We want to get it right. We don't want to rush things, but certainly I think the timing is to get it done now.
Okay, Congressman Costa, last word on immigration reform. Is it going to happen this year?
I hope so. The good news is that the Senate bill coming over last week provides momentum, and I think it's a comprehensive approach, and it would work. I do think we need to get it right, and I'd hope we could pass a measure out of the House before August recess. But if we're delayed till September or October, it could still work. I'm very fearful if we don't do something this fall that next year we'll get in the middle of elections, and that, I think, would doom this effort. But let me be very clear. Notwithstanding the broad base of the coalition between business, labor, between, faith-based organizations that have been very helpful in this process, those who care about human rights, the House is going to be more difficult than the Senate. I think there's just no debating that. There are a number of members that I think on the Republican side that are inappropriately describing a path to citizenship as amnesty, and it's not amnesty. And, we need to come together with a bipartisan effort. Speaker Boehner, I think, would like to solve this problem. But I think last week, the most bipartisan thing we usually ever do in the House is the Farm Bill. And we had a lot of problems, and the Farm Bill failed. Now, we're going to try to bring it back up later this month. It remains to be seen whether or not we'll be successful. But the fact is that you have an open amendment process on the House floor. People put amendments in, then they don't vote for the bill. I think, shame on them. We got to be working together to solve this problem. It's only going to be done on a bipartisan basis.
Well, I want to thank Democratic Congressman Jim Costa and Republican Congressman Jeff Denham for being with us. Up next, a view from Washington with Michael Doyle, national correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers in Washington. That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking about immigration reform, and now we're being joined by Michael Doyle, national correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers in Washington. Welcome back to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
Glad to be back with you.
So, last time around in 2007, a report from the Conservative Heritage Foundation claiming that immigration reform would blow up the deficit or the federal budget derailed President Bush's attempt at immigration reform. Now the Heritage Foundation, who's headed by former Republican Senator Jim DeMint, has come out with an even more dramatic negative analysis saying immigration reform is going to cost taxpayers $6 trillion. I'm just wondering if that's going to have the same impact this time around, since this time around, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has projected a net savings of $197 billion over the next decade and $700 billion over the next 20 years if immigration reform passes. What do you think, Mike?
Well, that Heritage Foundation study, the most recent one, dropped like a boulder in the water. It was immediately critiqued by nonpartisan analysts. Their numbers were called into question. Heritage itself had to do some backpedaling on it. And the result is that, unlike in 2007, the Heritage budget assessment is not part of the debate at all. Former Senator DeMint, now the head of Heritage, has hardly been a factor in the public debate, and the Congressional Budget Office study suggesting long-term savings has been much more paramount in this. Although I've got to say, the budget issue has not been first and foremost in the minds of people talking about immigration, but for those who do, the Congressional Budget Office report is far more significant than Heritage.
You know, the Senate bill passed with overwhelming and bipartisan support. It was a 68-vote win. Is that going to put pressure on the House to pass some type of comprehensive immigration reform?
No. Five members of the Republican leadership, all from Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on down, all voted against the Senate bill. And the House is very much its own creature. That was seen very much in the Farm Bill that Congressman Costa talked about. The Farm Bill passed almost by an identical margin through the Senate, even a larger margin, in fact. And that put no pressure whatsoever on the House of Representatives, which earlier this year failed to pass. The politics is very different in the House than in the Senate. In the House of Representatives, members are looking to districts that have been carved out through gerrymandering, such that relatively few Republicans represent sizable Hispanic constituencies. So I would say that notwithstanding the 68-32 Senate vote, the House is looking at this without the sense of pressure at all.
You know, Secretary Boehner has said that he won't ask members of his party to cast a vote on something if the majority of them don't support it. This is the so-called Hastert rule. It's not really a rule. It's an informal agreement that the Republicans have. Do you think that's going to come into play here?
Oh, absolutely. It's named after Dennis Hastert, former Speaker of the House, largely forgotten, not much of a factor in history. But he did impose this so-called rule. And for John Boehner, who has sometimes breached it to pass something for the good of the country, now is faced with the fact that he's a very weak leader. And that's not a disparagement of him. It's just an observation on his caucus. He has a very fractious Republican caucus. There are a lot of independent political entrepreneurs who can raise their own money, who have their own ways to attract publicity, who don't need the goodies that leadership can traditionally offer. And Leader Boehner just has fewer tools in his disposal to rally them together. He has made the commitment that he will only move a bill with the majority of the Republican support, both a bill and the conference report, which is when the House and Senate come to a final negotiated agreement, if they do. And so, bound by that, I think it's going to be extremely difficult for him to get a bill through to the president's desk.
So you think getting a majority of the majority isn't going to happen?
I have my doubts. It is possible. There are certainly elements in the Republican caucus that very much want immigration bill. We're going to have to see how it comes forward. There are two paths. One is what is in the House called the Gang of Seven. Originally, there were eight members of the House, of the Republicans and Democrats. One of them fell off. They have been trying for months to draft their own proposal, similar to what the Senate Gang of Eight did. And I think that they just aren't going to be able to. They have some people who have no real background in cutting deals. So that will leave it up to the House Judiciary Committee, which up till now, under the leadership of Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, wants to do one piecemeal bill at a time. And there's a real difficulty in trying to join the Senate comprehensive package with the piecemeal House bills that eventually will be passing.
Could they have? I mean, I know the House wants to do this issue-by-issue approach as opposed to a comprehensive approach. At least that's what the talk is from the Judiciary Committee. But if they did that, couldn't they pass something and then, or a bunch of individual pieces that could then go to conference? And then they could work out a comprehensive bill that would put it all together?
That's the theory. And that's what has some House Republican conservatives very, very leery about moving anything through the House, because anything will be put into a conference where the notion is it'll develop momentum, and that once the senators work their will, win their way, and succeed in getting the pathway to citizenship and other elements of the comprehensive bill included, the theory is that'll become unstoppable when it gets back to the House. So that's the scenario that we're looking at, which is that the House will pass enforcement first, piecemeal provisions, and the idea is that'll go into the dark of night. It'll be negotiated, and a big package will arise. But that will still face this Hastert rule notion, where if Leader Boehner can't get a majority of his Republicans to support it, he's not going to bring it to the floor. And it's possible that they can succeed this fall. I personally think the odds are against it.
You know, they're talking about, at least on the Democratic side, that a pathway to citizenship is a deal breaker. What are the chances of that, you know, a pathway to citizenship? You know, right now it's what they're talking 13 years. What are the chances of something like that even if it's extended to 15 years or whatever, what's the chance of that passing the House?
Well, any that's kind of an excellent question, and I think whether it's a deal breaker or a deal maker, without a pathway to citizenship, there's no comprehensive immigration bill. Anything short of that is simply an enforcement bill and an employment verification bill. And if there's, as some have suggested, a notion that you can have legal status but without the possibility of attaining citizenship, that's a second-class residency that people, I think, are not on the immigrant advocacy groups will not accept. And so I would expect that one of the fights will be stiffening the requirements and lengthening the time frame for a pathway to citizenship. But there is a strong core of conservatives in the House that don't want to have any pathway to citizenship for people who are currently in this country illegally. And that's going to be, I would suppose, the key sticking point.
You know, Senator Lindsey Graham has been quoted as saying that if Republicans don't deal with this issue, they're going to be in a demographic death spiral as a party. Is at some point political reality going to set in for House Republicans and ultimately then lead to a resolution of this issue?
Well, there are two political realities, and Senator Graham may be looking at this from the national perspective, and those who look at Governor Romney's presidential campaign, where he failed utterly at his effort to get the Hispanic vote, may think that it's in the party's, Republican Party's, best interest to lure Hispanic voters with an immigration bill. House members look at a different dynamic. Look at the numbers. There are 234 or so House Republicans. 210 of them represent districts that have fewer than 25% Hispanic voters. Two-thirds of Hispanic voters in the country are congregated in Democratic districts. So from the perspective of an individual House member, they may see no advantage whatsoever in voting for a Hispanic and an immigration bill that's attractive to Hispanics. If they're not looking at the national party, but only for their own district, they may vote for their own race.
So they can stay in office, so they can win the primary. Because if they vote on immigration reform, they could be primaried, right?
Well, that's another good point, which is that the great fear in today's gerrymandered world is not a opposite party challenge, because parties are stuffed into districts so that your real challenge is going to come from either the right, if you're in the conservatives, or if you're a Republican, or from the left, if you're a Democrat. And to be primaried, which is the new verb, has happened to several House Republicans over the last election cycle or two. And so that is a further dynamic that would make it harder to, and not easier, to move an immigration bill through.
Well, I want to thank our guest, Michael Doyle, national correspondent from McClatchy Newspapers in Washington, Congressman Jeff Denham, Republican from Modesto, and Congressman Jim Costa, Democrat from Fresno, for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Matty Daily, by just logging on to our website at mattyinstitute.org.
The Matty Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for The Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.